order, the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee of the 29th Alaska State Legislature. Today is December 7th, 2015. We're meeting approximately 1:30 p.m. in the Anchorage LIO facility. Madam Secretary, are you online?
Yes, I am, sir.
Madam Secretary, would you please call our roll?
Yes. Senator Stedman? Senator Bishop?
Present.
Senator Geisel? Senator Hoffman?
Here.
Senator Kelly? Senator McKinnon?
Here.
Representative Kito?
Here.
Representative Olson?
Here.
Representative Thompson?
Here.
Representative Pruitt? Representative Newman? Representative Hawker?
Present. With seven members present, including representation from both the House and the Senate, we do have a statutory quorum to conduct business. Appreciate sincerely everyone being here today. This is obviously the summer period. It's difficult for everyone. I sincerely appreciate your commitment to making Chris Curtis, our state auditor, a very happy person. So what we've got today is one RPL to finish up. We've got executive session for review of audits that are in confidential status, hopefully come forward and releasing these publicly. So first thing on our agenda is going to be the RPL for the Department of Education and Early Development. I guess online, Heidi, are you there to be able to present this one to us?
Sir Hopper, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay.
And if you would introduce yourself for our record, please, and again, present this RPL, and then we'll be able to consider where we're at.
Yes. For the record, my name is Heidi Teschner. I am the Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Education. And before you today is RPL 05-6-0111. With the Department of Education and Early Development Division of Teaching and Learning Support, a Child Nutrition Program, is requesting an increase of $8.7 million in federal receipt authority to receive additional U.S. Department of Agriculture grant funds. Currently, the FY16 Child Nutrition Program's federal receipt authority is a little over $15.3 million. This request would bring the FY16 Child Nutrition Program's total federal receipt authority a little over $61.0 million. These programs are fully federally funded. The funding will provide support for significant growth we've experienced within our U.S. Department of Agriculture Federal Nutrition Services block grant, which includes programs such as the National School Lunch Program, the Child and Adult Care Food Program, Summer Food Program, among some others. Without full authority, the U.S. Department of Agriculture Meal Program will have to be terminated or reduced, and this will impact funding to school districts, as well as child care centers, Head Start agencies, as well as summer meal program. The major growth that you're seeing in the school meals is directly attributed to our community eligibility program, which provides free breakfast and lunches to all students of low-income schools. The results in Alaska, as well as in other states, is these schools experience an overall increased participation in meal programs when meals are free, such as the students are much better prepared to receive their education when they have food in their bellies. This RPL requires no state funding. Like I said, these are all fully federally funded. It's just because more students are eligible to participate does not mean they have to participate in the program. But we are seeing more kids participating because of this. But that is the RPL for you. If you have any questions, so let me know.
And Heidi, Representative Hawker here. I heard you say it there, but could you confirm very, very clearly that this is additional federal money available to the state of Alaska without requiring any additional general funds investments or in-kind contributions by the state of Alaska?
That is correct, Chair.
So, do we have other questions from the committee for Heidi Teichner of DEED?
I got one.
Senator Bishop, sir.
Hey, thank you. On the second page of the detail on this, I was just on the budgetary issues. It's just a FYI for me for clarification. This is authorization for 8.7, and it's for billable claims. Is that, did I read that accurate down there, the last, second to the last sentence in this?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Bishop, this is all based on actual claims of actual meals served.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Before I go to Ledge Finance here, this is the second time this committee's heard this RPL. It was heard at our last meeting, and due to legislative objection to it, there were not sufficient votes to pass it. Heidi, I think there was some concern that this program would create a deepening of our consideration of what would be a welfare class and bring more people onto these federally subsidized programs, creating increased reliance upon them, and concern that our constituents did not want to have their kids placed as increasing reliance on federal government handouts. So how did you respond to that? And why should we create a further additional reliance upon the federal government to run this program, knowing that federal money is always going to be challenged and we may not have it in the future after we've created an expectation that these programs are provided?
Yes, Chair Hopper. Parents, do not have to, children do not have to participate in the program if their parents choose for them not to. So if it allows, students will learn better when they have food.
And Heidi, I'm sorry, can somebody work and get a better volume? We're having a very difficult time hearing you.
Is that better?
Yes.
As I stated, not all parents, parents do not have to have their children participate in this program. They still have to sign that their kids will participate. So if a parent chooses not to have their kids, they don't have to. So therefore, they wouldn't have to be singled into that low-income category. We all know that students will learn better when they've been able to have a decent meal, and not everybody is allowed to have that, or, you know, does not have the access to that. So this allows all of those students to take advantage to help them learn better. Does that answer your question?
Well, thank you, Heidi. Representative Hawker again. Yes, I appreciate that answer, and the clarity that parents are not required to participate is good clarity. But from a state perspective, is it a good thing for us to create increased reliance upon a federally subsidized program that likely is not going to be sustainable in the future, when there likely be expectations by the parents and families that these funds would be made up by the state of Alaska? Do you think this is a really good route to go?
Me personally, yes, I do think it is. This is a fully federally funded program. I don't see it in the future that the state will have to subsidize this. If this is not approved, school districts would then have to use state money to fulfill the backflow of not having the federal money to pay for the meals that they've already served.
So you're saying we are already obligated to pay general fund money for this program if we don't expect to receive this money from the state, or excuse me, receive this money from the federal government?
No. So either programs would have to be seriously reduced or terminated because school districts could not afford to, but if they had anything beyond anything that already occurred beyond what federal money we could give them, they would have to backfill that with state funding.
So they would have to curtail a proposed increase, which is a net zero. Sorry about that. It doesn't make sense to me.
So what I'm trying to say, Chair Hawker, is that if there's no federal funding if we don't have the federal authority to pay school districts for meals that they've already paid or already dispersed to students, there is a chance they would either have to terminate the program throughout the school year, during the school year, or they would have to substantially reduce it with the federal authority that they currently get. And then they would not have to subsidize that with state dollars. So it would affect the programs without the funding. But we will not come back for more state funding for the child nutrition program itself.
And I really sincerely appreciate that clarity. And then before we go to the rest of the committee, you stated that your prefacing comment to this last dialogue was, it is your opinion. Is this your personal opinion, or is this the opinion of your agency and the Walker administration?
I would say this is the opinion of the agency and the administration.
Thank you very kindly. For members of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Representative Tito, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Ms. Tushner. Actually, more of a comment, and I guess I think we do have opportunities with federal funding available to help, especially our disadvantaged students. And one of the things that I would caution us as a legislature to consider is that in this day and age, we are receiving $300, $400 million a year from the federal government for our federal highway transportation program. We're receiving close to, if not a little more than, $100 million a year from the Federal Aviation Administration for capital construction on our aviation program. So we do have a very significant amount of federal money on the capital side as well as on the operating side that we receive every year. And I think we really do need to make sure that we have the ability to capitalize on the amount of Fed funding that we can receive in the state to help our residents. I think when we're talking about the possible loss of federal funds, we shouldn't forget that we also get a significant amount of capital funds that we could lose as well. And so those are things that I think I don't know that any of us would consider decreasing our federal fund receipt for aviation or highways. I think we also need to keep that in mind when we're looking at some of these other programs.
Thank you, Representative Keto. Representative Olson, sir.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Heidi, I've got kind of a simple question, I think. Are we giving the federal government artificially inflated numbers if we're giving them families that we know that aren't going to be participating? And I guess it's a two-part question. If we are, does the state have any liability for over-reporting?
Through the chair, we are not providing any artificial numbers to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We are basing our numbers on projections from on the average of the last two school years. So, and while we'll get a set authorization from the federal government, we only bill them for what we actually spend. So we don't overclaim, we don't overbill them, and don't receive any more federal money than we actually paid out the door for actual claims.
Thank you very much. That puts me at ease.
Chair Hawker?
Yes, sir. Please identify yourself and continue.
Click, that is Click Bishop. Heidi, I'm reading it, and I've read this thing. I've sped read it, but because I wasn't at the last meeting, I was out of state. But it appears to me, you know, and I don't have, all I can go off is what I'm reading, but the increase is due to that, to the population growth of school-aged children in Anchorage. It looks like the driver of this thing, and at the end of the day, it's reimbursables. It's up to 8.7, but there's nothing to say that the state's going to bill for 8.7. It's just that number was driven off these population estimates, largely within the Anchorage School District. And
yeah.
Anyway, that's my comments. I personally don't.
Do you have a response to the senator?
Yes, through the chair, that's a correct statement. We are asking for up to 8.7, but the chances are, you know, if we don't end up using all of that authority, we assume we're going to get up to that, but we may not. It will be based on actuals.
Okay. Thank you.
And thank you. So, for any further committee questions for Heidi before we go to legislative finance? Hearing seeing none. Lacey Sanders, are you there with Legislative Finance?
Yes, I am.
Well, if you would introduce yourself for the record, and if you could please put on record the legislative's fiscal analyst comments on this RPL.
Of course. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders with Legislative Finance Division. Legislative fiscal analyst comments include the previous comments made by Ms. Tishner, which is there are no general funds required and no additional staff is needed. Leg Finance finds no technical issues with this RPL.
Any questions from the legislator for our Legislative Finance Division? Hearing see none, I give the committee the last opportunity to raise any questions, and if not, I believe the will of the committee would be the next thing that we would figure out. Hearing see no further questions. As Senator McKinnon is online, not present, Senator McKinnon, I hope you'll indulge me in allowing me to have Representative Olson read our motions here today.
That would be helpful. Thank you.
Representative Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee approve RPL 0560111, Department of Education Early Development Child Nutrition Program for $8,700,000 federal receipts, in code 1002, as an operating budget item.
So the question before the committee is the approval of RPL 056-0111, as we previously discussed. I'm going to ask for a roll call vote on this, as we have a lot of people online, and I would note for the record that we have been joined by Representative Pruitt as well. Welcome, sir. So, Madam Secretary, the question before the committee is the approval of the RPL. Would you please call the roll?
Yes. Senator Sedman? Senator Bishop, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator McKinnon?
Yes.
Representative Kito?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative Pruitt?
Yes.
Representative Hawker?
Yes. So on a vote of 8 yeas and 0 nays, the RPL has been approved. Congratulations, Department of Education. We're going to move on with our meeting into executive session to discuss audits that are currently in a confidential status. Do hope to come out of executive session shortly here and move a number of these audits into the public domain. So with that, Representative Olson, a motion would be in order, sir.
Mr. Chair, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee enter into executive session under Uniform Rule 22B1 and B3, and that the meeting involve a discussion of matters that the immediate knowledge would adversely affect the finances of the governmental unit. Under AS 2420301 for discussion of confidential audit and performance reviews.
So the question before the committee is entering executive session to discuss these audits and performance review, audit and performance review reports. Is there any objection from the committee? Hearing see none, we will enter executive session. With the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, we are meeting on December 7th, 2015. In order to reestablish our quorum after a lengthy executive session where we discussed procuring additional audit support services and audit reports that are currently in a confidential status that we will now be releasing publicly. Madam Secretary, could you call the roll one more time to reestablish our quorum?
Yes, sir. Senator Stennett? Senator Bishop?
Present.
Senator Giesel? Senator Hoffman? Senator Kelly? Senator McKinnon?
Here.
Representative Kito?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Here.
Representative Thompson?
Here.
Representative Pruitt? Representative Newman? Representative Hawker?
With a quorum count of 6 members present, including representatives of both the House and the Senate, we do have a quorum to conduct business.
Mr. Chairman, this is Lyman. I'm still here.
Oh, we now have 7 members. All right. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Thank you very much. Again, for the record, statutorily, we are required to have an affirmative vote of 6 members of this committee in order to release an audit. So with that, we have a series of motions, and again, with due deference and respect to Senator McKinnon, who is not able to attend, she is able to attend, but by teleconference, I've asked Representative Olson to make our motions for us. So, Representative Olson, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee authorize the legislative auditor to award and enter into a contract for specialized information technology expertise to review the state's Integrated Resource Information System, IRIS, in amount not to exceed $400,000.
So the question before our committee is the approval of the IRIS system and ITEC assistance in an amount not to exceed $400,000. Is there objection from any committee member? Hearing see none, so ordered. Representative Olson, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the following final audits be released to the public. Division of Alaska Pioneer Homes, Big Game Commercial Services Board, Sunset.
So the question before the committee is the release of the final audits for the Division of the Alaska Pioneer Homes and the Big Game Commercial Services Board's Sunset audit. Is there any objection to that motion? Hearing see none, so ordered.
And Mr. Chairman.
Representative Olson, sir.
I move that the committee release the following final Department of Public Health and Social Services performance review reports to the public. Behavioral health, long-term care, and administrative structure.
And it would emphasize for clarity that those are 3 separate physical reports, one on the Department of Health and Human Services Behavioral Health, another on the long-term care, and another on the administrative structure of the agency. So with that clarification, I will object for a quick question to our state auditor. Chris, we had started to have a brief offline conversation here, since these are significant performance reviews of a very significant agency of a great deal of interest to many folks, and there is some certainly controversial findings in here, a lot of meat to digest here. Could you explain on the record what the process is as we release these for making sure that this information is available to legislators, to the finance committees, and to the public at large?
Representative Hawker, this is Chris Curtis, the legislative auditor. After the reports are released by the committee, we will be posting them on the website, our website. Included on the website will be the full report, as well as summaries of key findings and recommendations that have been summarized by our agency. However, we do want to note that the reports are full of findings and recommendations. Each report is over 200 pages. So we attempted to summarize this information. However, we're going to be encouraging all legislators to have their budget knowledgeable staff go through these reports, because there can certainly be other information in them that they are of particular interest to a specific legislator that it will not show up on these summaries. So the summaries that we've created will be available on our website as well to help guide folks in reviewing the reports. We will also be preparing a summary of potential legislation that legislators may be interested in sponsoring or considering to sponsor that were suggested in these reports. I do want to emphasize that these reports are the opinion and product of the contractors that were hired by our agency. They are independent objective reviews by folks that we consider to be experts in the field. So our plan is to, within the next day or two, create emails that will go out to every legislator. HB 30 requires that we provide these reports to the co-chairs of both Senate and House Finance. Our procedures also require that we provide executive summaries to all legislators, so we're going to be doing all of that by through email with links to our website for the summaries and the full report.
And I do believe you also, as a matter of procedure and practice, make a formal public, press release on the availability of the audits.
Yes, we will be sending out a press release, I believe also through email. We're also sending hard copies to chairs of House Finance and Senate Finance, as well as chairs of both the Health and Social Services Committees and chairs of the Finance Subcommittees for Health and Social Services.
I would ask, these are very voluminous reports, and if your smart IT people, when they do post those on the web, sometimes we neglect to do the reduced size PDFs, and we get these 10 megabyte PDF files. Could you please use reduced size PDFs for posting?
Yes, certainly. And we are also going to be attempting to include links in our summaries that will allow people to drill down into the voluminous reports more efficiently.
Thank you. That's really appreciated very much. So, members of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, this is Senator McKinnon.
Senator McKinnon, ma'am, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Ms. Curtis, could you tell us how much in-depth documentation was done in regards to the Medicaid waivers for 1915 I and K? In fact, does the report highlight the state's option or potential risk on the waivers that are discussed in the report?
Senator McKinnon, the question being asked is one that the Chris indicates is she is not qualified to respond to. Would you like to ask me pass that to Ross?
Certainly.
Chris, could you put your it's on the record for Senator McKinnon?
This is Chris Curtis, Legislative Auditor. The reports are not public at this point, so I will wait until they're after they're released and for addressing what's in them.
Senator McKinnon, would you withdraw that question until we conclude our vote, and then I'll give you the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're very welcome, ma'am. The question before the committee is the release of the behavioral, the House Bill 30, Department of Health and Social Services Performance of Review Reports, selectively identified for the Behavioral Health Division, the Long-Term Care Activities, and the Administrative Structure of the Agency. So is there committee any objection on the committee to the release of these reports? Hearing seen none, so ordered. These are now public documents. Senator McKinnon, could you rephrase your question for Mr. Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ross, just because we have volumes of information that are getting ready to be dispatched now to the general public, I have a question regarding the Medicaid waivers, 1915I and 1915K. In my review, in participation of Medicaid reform conversations outside of this committee, I have some knowledge as to what the 1915 I and K obligates the state to do, and I was wondering if the report that's currently released, if that has any of the negative consequences or accurately reflects a comparison of the state's potential risks for those two waiver programs.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon, through the chair. The reports themselves do not go in depth into risks, but they do provide, they include a disclaimer basically that the reports themselves are providing a recommendation on how the state can shift costs to the federal government or collaborate with the federal government on ways to lower state expenditures. But they do the reports recognize that in order to move forward on any of these recommendations, the state will need to seriously consider the risks. So although they do not go in depth into the risks themselves, they do not make a blanket, this is a good idea on moving forward on any of these options or waivers without further study.
Senator McKinnon? Making sure, Senator McKinnon, are you still online?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am, but I did not unmute myself because I have Mickey Mouse going in the background.
Family-friendly committee here, ma'am, and we welcome Mickey Mouse and your grandchildren.
Thank you. Well, it's getting more of a challenge right now. Mr. Chairman, is it true that the Department of Health and Human Services, I've been following this teleconference-wise, did not comply with the request to show us a 10% reduction anywhere?
Ross, sir.
Senator McKinnon, through the chair, that is correct. The proposed list of reductions that was put forth by the department was a list of totaling approximately 4.5% of their budget, their general fund budget, and it was as part of the governor's amended budget that he put out last year. So it was not in full compliance with the requirements of the RFP or the statute.
Thank you, Ross. Mr. Chairman, my only comment is to our committee in itself. We've went through two audit cycles now with two different departments and haven't really had the results that we had hoped for under passage of the bill that is going through looking at performance audits. And I'm wondering if we need to have a discussion on the efforts as they go forward in investing this much money to understand what a department is doing and having departments refuse to comply with Alaska state statute.
Yeah, thank you. You echo my sentiments exactly, Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, with that, I'm going to mute myself.
Thank you, ma'am. Sincerely appreciate you being able to join us here today. Are there any other committee concerns for the good of the order? Well, I guess hearing see none, I thank everyone, and again, particularly committee members that stood with us this afternoon. I very, very much appreciate the necessity of getting this job done. I know our legislative finance people are just chomping at the bit to get their hands on these reports as well, and thank everyone, Chris, and again, Ross, I tend to be more colloquial as a chair. I call you Ross. I call you Mr. Ross. And just for the record, Madam Secretary, our testifier here, our performance review manager at the Department of Health and our Division of Legislative Audit is Mr. Ross Alexander. And I thank you very kindly for the dedication you give to this process. So with that, we will stand adjourned.